This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
bbclearningenglish.com presents Talk About English, a series of radio features that support your English language studies. This program is for people who want some help following English news bulletins. We focus on some of the language and topics that often appear in the news, as we join Gary Stevens for this program, first broadcast in 2003.
British forces have gone on a chemical and biological alert in northern Kuwait after Scud missiles were allegedly launched.
They said the lorry used in the attack not only contained a huge amount of explosives, but was also packed with artillery shells, mortars and grenades.
The terrorist problem, it is emerging as the number one security threat, and
it was a general terrorist warning given late last year.
The quantity of smaller radioactive sources falling into the hands of terrorists who could create dirty bombs.
In this series, we're considering the major themes that appear in BBC World Service news programmes. Today's big story is international security. We'll focus on some of the issues and, of course, the language behind the topic. Rupert Pengelly is technical editor for Jane's Information Group, an organisation that publishes information about defence, operation, technologies and transport. The group produces publications such as Jane's Defence Weekly, Jane's Fighting Ships, Jane's All the World's Aircraft, and one of its newer titles is Jane's School Safety Handbook. Rupert Pengelly lives in southwest London, and I took a short train journey to meet him to get some expert advice. Now, as part of my preparation for our interview today, I did a search on the BBC News website. I typed in weapon, the word weapon, and got some 2,071 search results. Is there any way, first of all, that we can categorise the kinds of weapons that appear in the world and are reflected in news stories?
I think obviously, the weapons that immediately come to mind are rifles, artillery pieces, the conventional weapons. But what you see mostly, of course, are so-called small arms. These are the type of weapon which you can carry in your hands. But weapons, of course, take many different forms. Information itself is regarded as a weapon to the extent that if you can influence somebody to do what you want them to do by bombarding them with either threats or with information which would lead them to the conclusion that it would be silly to resist, then that, if you like, war of words has done the fighting for you. But at the other extreme, of course, you get so-called weapons of mass destruction, nuclear, chemical or biological weapons, which are not readily aimed at particular points. Their effect is rather too wide-ranging, much more widely ranging than an artillery shell, for example.
You referred earlier to conventional weapons, and another term I've heard is non-conventional or unconventional weapons. What exactly do we mean by those? Is it to do with nuclear and chemical and biological weapons?
That's a very difficult one. Conventional weapons are those which have existed down the ages, meaning rifles or machine guns or cannon of one kind or another. It's extended to include aircraft with their bombs and so on. But unconventional weapons, ironically, tend to mean terrorist weapons, or can mean terrorist weapons, those which are made up of everyday items from the high street. You could describe that as an unconventional weapon, but it can also mean, as you've suggested, chemical or biological weapons.
Rupert Pengelly from Jane's Information Group. More from him later. The area of definitions was a good starting point when I spoke to our defence correspondent, Jonathan Marcus. My first question for him was about the phrase international security. In the context of our World Service news bulletins, what does international security mean?
Well, I think people listening to our news are clearly going to hear a lot of stories that deal with, for example, fighting in Iraq. They're going to hear stories about the spread of so-called weapons of mass proliferation. That's nuclear, chemical and biological weapons, and of course the very long-range missiles that are used to carry those weapons. They're going to hear a lot of stories about what people refer to as international terrorism.
The terrorists want to return to the days of torture chambers and mass graves. The Iraqis who want peace and freedom must reject them and fight terror. And the United States and many in the world will be there to help them.
Well, let's look at this issue of international terrorism, if you like. And we sometimes hear the phrase the war against terrorism. Who's involved in that war? Who's the enemy?
I think it's a controversial term. I mean, clearly the idea of a war against terrorism is very much the position of the Bush administration in the United States. They effectively declared a war against terror in the wake of the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon in New York and Washington, respectively. It's quite clear that there is a growing phenomenon of a form of terrorism which sees simply large casualty tolls as one of its goals. It tends to be a form of activity that is very much directed against the West and particularly against the United States and its allies. It's a little difficult because clearly if you have a war, one assumes there are a set of targets you can then attack. And of course that is much more difficult because people who are branded as terrorists often tend to be distributed in a host society. They're very difficult to track down, very difficult to pinpoint.
As you've said, it's very hard to identify where this war is taking place. I mean, will we ever know when it's over?
Well, I think that is another of the, I think you're right to ask that question, because that is another one of the areas where perhaps using this word war is not perhaps terribly appropriate. In a normal war, if you want to call it that, there are military engagements, there are battles, there are clashes, sadly people die. Usually there is some form of conclusion. I think the so-called war against terrorism is very difficult and very different. I think this is something a little like crime. You might as well say there is a war against crime. The question is how you best go about minimising it, fighting it and dealing with it when it erupts.
A comfortable sitting room in southwest London seems an odd place to find oneself talking about acts of war and terrorism. And in my conversation with Rupert Pengelly of Jane's Information Group, we moved on to a discussion of the weapons that are frequently mentioned in news bulletins.
Well, let's take missiles in themselves as a generic category, as a general grouping. A missile is deemed to be a rocket which is guided. A missile is a more discriminatory weapon than a rocket. One has guidance in and the other doesn't. Now, an air-to-air missile is simply that which is fired from one aircraft against another. An air-to-ground missile or air-to-surface missile is one which is fired from the air against something on the land or against something which is at sea.
So can you have a surface-to-surface missile as well?
Exactly right, and that's precisely what a Scud missile is. A Scud, of course, is a particularly well-known one, closely related to the V-2 rocket, so-called, in the World War II. But it's one to which a rudimentary form of guidance has been put, such that it will come down within a few kilometres of the target against which it's fired.
And what about a cruise missile, then? What's a cruise missile?
A cruise missile is generally one which flies in the atmosphere and therefore takes a flatter trajectory and goes more slowly than a ballistic missile. A ballistic missile has a great looping trajectory up into, possibly all the way into space, and then comes down in a sort of vertical trajectory onto top of its target. a cruise missile will fly following the contours of the Earth towards its target and will do lots of turns and so on to confuse people on the ground as to where it's heading. And it is very accurate, much more accurate than a Scud missile, for example.
The next category of words I've picked out are all to do with bombs, I think. Smart bombs, dirty bombs. Maybe we could talk about those. What's a smart bomb?
Smart was the word which was invented about 15, 20 years ago to describe a bomb, which is a cylinder full of explosives with fins on the end, which you dropped from a great height. And they attached the word smart to it to signify that it had some form of guidance. And in some cases, the guidance was cleverer than others. So it went from being a guided bomb to a smart bomb, which usually means it has two or three types of guidance in it.
Now, it strikes me that any kind of bomb is not something you'd want landing anywhere near where you are. But what do we mean by a dirty bomb?
A dirty bomb is a version of a nuclear weapon. It's normally considered to be an improvised device in which somebody has taken a mass of radioactive material and put explosive, conventional, what we call high explosive, inside that lump, and then triggers the high explosive to blow the radioactive material over a wide area. And that sits there radiating for years, and the effect, of course, is that you have to evacuate that area.
And so in that case, the dirty element is in effect the radioactive material.
Yes, I mean, it's metaphorically dirty, yes. It's dirty in the sense that it leaves radiation everywhere, and it's dirty in the sense that it is an underhand, disallowed category of weapon.
Rupert Pengelly. As we've heard, there's a great deal of specialist technical vocabulary associated with stories about war and international security. How does this affect those who work as journalists and news reporters? I asked defence correspondent Jonathan Marcus.
If you start speaking as though you are a soldier or an arms salesman or a minister of defence in a government, you're going to lose your audience pretty quickly. You know, people don't necessarily have the same vocabulary, the same terms and so on. So I think, in a sense, you have to do a little bit of a translation. You have to translate some of these things into terms or phrases that ordinary people would understand.
Our defence correspondent, Jonathan Marcus, one of a number of BBC journalists who have the difficult task of reporting on acts of violence throughout the world.
That was Talk About English from bbclearningenglish.com.